We're very lucky to have with us today Holly Goddard-Jones. Holly is the acclaimed author of the novel The Next Time You See Me, which Gillian Flynn, author of Gone Girl, called an astoundingly good novel. She also wrote the wonderful short story collection Girl Trouble, which Edward P. Jones called a grand debut. Her work has appeared in the Best American Mystery Stories, New Stories from the South, Tin House, and many other places. She was a recipient of the Fellowship of Southern Writers Award for Excellence in Fiction and of a Rona Jaffe Foundation Writers Award, among other honors. She earned her MFA from Ohio State University and her BA from the University of Kentucky. She is a native of Russellville, Kentucky, which is in Logan County. Right now, she teaches creative writing at UNC Greensboro, and she lives there in Greensboro with her husband, Brandon, and their children. Well, welcome back to the show, Holly. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me.
What do you want our listeners to know about your new book, The Salt Line?
Well, it is, I think a literary, speculative hybrid. And so my hope for it is that if you are a reader of literary fiction, if you like speculative or dystopian fiction, it should, I'm hoping, appeal to both readership. It's about a version of the United States not so far into the future that has been radically changed by a pretty nasty form of a tick that carries a tick-borne illness that is quite deadly. So the book begins with a group of very wealthy people in what is now Central North Carolina who are going on what's been branded as an adventure excursion out of their quarantine zone and into the Appalachian Mountains for a few weeks of R&R. And what they encounter when they go beyond the wall into this area proves to be a surprise and more than just disease ticks. So that's a sketch of the premise of the book.
Yeah, they don't get a lot of R&R, that's for sure.
not so much R, yeah.
Right, yeah, I just finished the book, and it's, you know, such a page-turner, and no rest and relaxation. But, you know, that's what you want in a novel. You want all the trouble you can get, right? You want the trouble
right,
and attention.
Right, yeah. That would not make for a very interesting novel, rest and recreation, no.
Right, right. You're primarily known as a literary writer, but and you sort of alluded to this, but this book is more of a hybrid in that it is still literary. You know, it's still language driven, it's character driven, and all that. But it's also more of a genre book. So did you have trepidation about going into that world?
I mean, so the writing of it was mostly a pleasure, and the story revealed itself to me in a way that rarely happens for me. It was as if I was unearthing the story rather than figuring it out at lots of points. And so the inside experience of putting the book together felt very natural, felt very right. I did have trepidation throughout the process about how it would be received and how I would be perceived as the person who had written it. And so I, tend to kind of derisively call it my killer tick book. And every now and then I would say to my husband, oh, God, what are people going to think of my killer tick book? And, he'd try to talk me off the ledge each time that happened. But, I think my fear has always been that because of, the general sketch of what the story is about, maybe people would take it less seriously when, for me, the subject matter is very serious. And, the book was as carefully crafted on my end as anything I've written.
Well, like I said, it is an absolute page turner. I think sometimes when people hear you say that, they just think that means, that it's, I don't know, kind of light and just something you read at the beach and forget about, right? But there are all these really layered characterizations, and we get to know these people so well. My favorite character in the book is June, and I just loved all the layers to her. And these lyrical sentences and really profound themes going on. But one thing I was really envious of reading the book, because I struggle with it so much myself, is the pacing. Like I said, you know, it's just, it's so well paced. So how did you go about that? Is it just, did it come to you that way, or?
I mean, thanks for saying that. I'm going to be kind of at a loss here because, you know, as I said, the process of writing this book was really unique for me in that, I've tried to retrace how it even is that I started writing it. And to the best of my recollection, you know, I went for a run. I was in Kentucky visiting family. You know, a few ideas sparked as I was running. I came back to my mother-in-law's apartment and had just the beginning stuff kind of rolling around in my head, and sat down and in the space of an hour had written, you know, like 11, 12 pages, and wanted to keep working on it. And for a long time, it was like that. I wanted to sit down. The storyline just kind of came out of me, and I didn't even really know where it was coming from or why. I got to various points in the book where I started to feel that kind of uncertainty that feels more common to my writerly experience. And each time that happened, I think it was at a point where I was, you know, going through something personally in my life that distracted me from the writing, and that also had me reconfiguring what it is I was writing about. And so the big thing for me was I wrote about 100 pages of this before getting pregnant with my first child. And when that happened, it stumped me at first. I wasn't sure how to proceed. And then after that, it just made me think very differently about what I was doing with the book thematically. And when I started to consider the book again through that lens, I knew all kinds of things I didn't know before, and it really unlocked another dimension of the story that I was trying to tell.
I'm a big fan also of your last novel, The Next Time You See Me, and that one is set in Roma, Kentucky. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I always think of that as sort of a fictionalized version of Russellville. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, it was basically what I wanted to take from Russellville and what I wanted to leave behind. So, you know, having my cake and eating it, too, is what Roma ultimately was.
Right. But this one is set mostly in Western North Carolina and largely within the Great Smoky Mountains. Why the switch? Why did you choose that particular place for this one?
Well, I've lived for 8 years now in Greensboro, North Carolina, and so it's been a long enough span of time for me that this is a place that I'm starting to know in a way that I know Kentucky. I mean, in some ways know better, just because only 2 years of my adult life were spent in Kentucky. I worked at Murray State University in Murray for 2 years. So I went back to Kentucky when I was 27 and lived there until I was 29. But aside from those 2 years, I lived in Kentucky until I was, you know, 22 and just finishing college. And so being an adult with children in a different phase of my life, I think, means that I live in this place differently than I lived in any other place up to this point. So I know North Carolina pretty well now, and the Smoky Mountains. I mean, you know, this, I think it really speaks to the connection for me and my experiences between North Carolina and Kentucky, because I've made the trip between here and there so many times, and I always pass through that I-40 Smoky Mountain corridor going through Asheville each time we drive home to visit family. And so that's a landscape that I've become pretty familiar with over the last 8 years.
It's funny you mentioned that. The whole time I was reading the novel, I was thinking of that area that we call the Gorge between Knoxville and Asheville, you know, where it's like you don't see a house or anything. It's really rugged territory. And so I thought it was interesting for this to be set in the Great Smoky Mountains because people from all over the nation who don't know anything about Appalachia know about the Smokies. You know, it's our most visited national park. And so I thought that was such an interesting place to set it because so many people have been there and you use it so effectively in the book. The whole book, I just felt like I was right there in that gorge. You know, it's what I kept picturing. One aspect of the book that I wanted to make sure we talked about was you were obviously writing this book long before the 2016 election, but particular aspects of the novel, especially towards the end, they're almost prophetic. Do you know what I mean? Can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, and how that came to be?
I finished the first draft of the book in December of 2015. And when I saved that file, I don't think the political situation in this country, that possibility seemed remotely within reach to me. So, I guess at the point when I was doing a pretty major revision around the time Donald Trump was around the time he received the nomination, the Republican Party nomination, and I had just finished line edits in the October before the election, the presidential election. And so I guess what you see in the book is a combination of coincidence and a little bit of steering and tweaking toward the end based on what I was experiencing as I was doing final edits to the book. And so in every iteration of the book, there was this character, David Perrone, who was, kind of, in the book, he's a sort of mob boss. And he is a person who uses these different kinds of contractors outside of the protected safe zone space to his political advantage or to his, financial advantage. And so when I started the book, I was thinking a lot more about border crossings, like, the Mexican-American border and how drugs are moved across the border. Some of the research that I did was into, there was a book called Narco that I read that was about the heroin industry in Mexico and the sort of symbiotic relationship between Mexico and the United States. And one of the things that really interested me in that book was not only the mechanics of how those drug cartels work and the relationship they have politically with the United States, but the culture that has developed around them. They sort of have their own subculture. They have their own music. They even have religious figures that bleed into Catholicism. So all of that was really interesting to me. And the book always had this border, this wall that was, a kind of symbol even within the space of the novel, being that characters debate amongst themselves, is this a wall that actually accomplishes anything? Is it actually keeping out what it is supposed to keep out? And early on, there was this idea, again, in the earliest draft of a kind of, the term was waste repurposing ramparts. So turning what would normally be landfill waste into a big border to keep people out of this Atlantic zone, as it's described in the novel. Right. So all of that was in the book. And then when Trump got the nomination, I started to think about David Perrone's character as more of a political figure, a guy with political ambitions. And so that came about as I was seeing the stuff that was happening in the world, and so I shaped him. But I mean, I have to say, it wasn't as much shaping and tilting as you would think. I think there's just a lot of, unfortunately, there's just a lot of stuff that coincidentally happened to be in the book, ready to kind of tweak to the surface after I was watching what was happening in the world.
When I was growing up, I loved Stephen King, and in some ways, this book reminds me of the way King writes in that, you know, he builds these really complex characters. And the premise is, could sort of remind me a little bit of like The Stand or The Mist or, you know, something like that. And the main thing is that Stephen King is, you know, he's always writing about these monsters or catastrophes or whatever. But really what we should fear are other people the most, you know. And so I love the way that theme arises. So I just wondered if you came up reading Stephen King as well, and if not, who did you read that was similar, you know, in like this kind of writing?
Yeah, no, definitely. Definitely grew up on Stephen King, and books like The Stand definitely imprinted on me. And, you know, so there's no coincidence that you're seeing that influence there. And I think one of the things that I continue to appreciate about Stephen King, mostly because I think this is a fault of my writing and something that I always get critiqued on, and it's an indulgence of mine. I just can't stop doing it. He's such a digressive writer. And so he's another person, you were talking about being a page-turner before, he's another person who writes work that I think is frequently described as, you know, page-turning novels. These are page-turners. And yet his novels tend to be 600 or 800 pages, and he goes into these elaborate character histories, and you know, just he's hugely digressive, and I love writing digression. I love writing character backstory. I love getting into, you know, little histories and side stories, and so so I think that aspect of his work is as much an influence on me as the kinds of subject matters he writes about, you know, post-apocalyptic or dystopian or whatever you want to call them. So yeah, Stephen King is probably the biggest influence and in kind of the DNA of what I do. As I got older and, you know, read more literary fiction, Margaret Atwood, I think, is the other pretty obvious influence. And I really love her work. I love her. And her Mad Adam trilogy was a huge influence on me.
So can you tell us what you're working on now, what you have in mind?
Yeah, so I have a contract for another book. At this point, it's, you know, a prospectus and maybe 60 pages of manuscript. And it is connected to the Salt Line. It happens about 30 years earlier in time, maybe 25 years earlier in time. And it takes up a new set of characters, but it is in the same world. And the way that I'm thinking of it, and speaking of Stephen King as an influence, what I pitched to my editor was Stand By Me or The Body would be the story that that was the basis for Stand By Me. But Stand By Me, dystopian with an all-female cast of characters. And so it's four young women, girls, you know, 12 and 13-year-old girls who travel beyond this border to try to rescue the older sister of one of them, who has been kind of trafficked, I guess you would say, to a place that's mentioned in the Salt Line called Flat Rock. So they go on a quest to try to rescue her and bring her back home. So that's the thing that I say I'm working on it. What that really means right now is that I wrote 60 pages and then I went back to work for maternity leave and I haven't touched it since then. So so in my head, I guess I work on it.
Right. Are you one of those writers who, you know, like that you're you'll get the idea and you'll write some of it and then you'll think about it for a year or so and you're, you know, building it all in your mind? And or do you work mostly on the page?
I you know, I do take long hiatuses, mostly just due to work and life. But I mean, I kind of always worked like that even before I had kids. But I'm on an academic calendar, and so what tends to happen, and maybe this is true just to some extent for you, is that I, you know, get a lot of writing done during the summer. I get a lot of writing done during winter break, and then I, you know, get little bits and pieces done during the semester. You know, a few pages here, you know, several pages there, and I'm not someone who has ever had a lot of luck with a daily, you know, 5 to 6 schedule. I know that works for a lot of people, but it just never has for me. I'm not disciplined enough. So,
yeah,
unfortunately, I probably need to get with the program.
Well, I kind of hate those people that can, you know, churn out 20 pages a day. So I much prefer people like you. Well, it's such a great read, and I'm so happy that it's out in the world, and I'll be looking for that next one, and hopefully a trilogy will be born of it, maybe.
Well, I have an idea for a third book, but I don't know. We'll have to see how the first two go.
Right. Well, congratulations on The Salt Line. I hope everybody out there will find a copy. You can find it wherever fine books are sold. Thanks so much for being with us here today, Holly. Thanks for writing such a good book.
Thank you so much. Great. Thanks, Silas.
And thanks to all of you for listening. Here's Justin Rutledge to close down the show. Until next time, be good to one another.